I'm on my call, Rick. Change whatever you need to change.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. So this is Dave Meyer, and I'm here to teach you guys about the art and science of using DISC in coaching. So are you all on the right call?
You are.
Okay. Well, welcome to our first session here tonight. This is the first of six sessions. And this, I will tell you, is one of the most fun classes I've ever taught. It is it's a fun thing to use. It's a fun thing to teach. It's a fun thing to learn. So I got to tell you, I really enjoy this. We have a relatively small class here. We have 11 in the class. And we have so far 9 of you on the call. So I'm missing 2 people still. But before we get started into some details here about what this is all about, et cetera, let me just hear from each of you individually about, first of all, who you are, where you're from, and how you would like to use DISC in your practice. So let's see. I'm going to go off the roster. Is Mac Johnson here?
Yes, I am.
So, Mac, would you introduce yourself to the group here?
Hi. My name is Mac Johnson. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I am a licensed neuropositive coach. For me to be able to use just the different profiles to test my clients and show them their strengths and their weaknesses, just to move them along in their profile there. That's what I'm here for.
Okay. So, Mac, very important question for you. Are you a Tribe fan?
No, I'm not much of a sports fan at all.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm from nearby you. I'm from Dover, Ohio, originally.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know where it's at. Yeah, down off of 77 down there in 250.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't lived there in 35 years, but I still follow all the Cleveland teams because it's how addictive Cleveland sports are. So.
Okay, cool.
So, Mac, welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Is Andy here? No, Andy. How about Mindy?
Hi, I'm Mindy Lipsky, and I'm from Pottstown, Pennsylvania, and I am a coach that I focus mainly on women who run direct sales businesses. So my hope for the DISC, I was actually introduced to DISC many years ago as a Mary Kay consultant, and it really helped me expand my Mary Kay business. So I'm hoping to be able to utilize that with my clients to help them identify themselves and some ways to identify that in their clients and their team members so that they can work more efficiently with their teams and with their customers.
Well, very good, Mindy. Welcome to the call here tonight.
Thank you.
How about Carolyn?
Hi, this is Carolyn. I'm in Connecticut, just outside of New Haven. And I, too, have used the disc before, and I decided I wanted a refresher, and I wanted to be able to start using the disc with in workshops and some of the other work that I do.
Very good. Disc is a great workshop tool. We don't cover how to use it in a workshop here in this class necessarily, but you can see how to do that. But I'll just tell you guys right up front that I use it as a for a lot of workshops because it turned into a lot of one-on-one coaching, and quite frankly, workshops pay really well. Yeah. So we'll discuss that a little later in the class, actually, more about that. Jennifer, are you here?
I'm here. I'm from Bloomfield, Michigan, and I currently work in the automotive sector, coaching clients in dealerships. And actually, I've done the disc before, and I got excited when I did it again last night and cracked up at everything that's still the same in my life, so nothing's changed. And I'm really looking forward to getting my hands around it because I'm finding in my coaching business, yeah, we're finding all the opportunities, but how do you communicate with a D, I, S, and C? And that's really where my clients are currently challenged. So this is going to be a fun six-class course for me. So I look forward to it.
Very good, Jennifer. And bring up a good point there. One of the things DISC does for you is DISC gives you a language to communicate not only with your clients, but them to communicate with others around them. That is a safe language. That's non-judgmental. It helps them see their natural strengths and areas for development at the same time, but in a very non-judgmental way. So it's good to have you here.
It's a great tool. I'm excited.
Good. How about Deb? Is Deb here?
Deb's here. Jen and I are in the same business. We work for the same company, so I'm in automotive. And, again, I have... You use the disc before, and in dealerships, it's real interesting because they are constantly dealing with everybody all day long and themselves, and this is just giving me more information, helping them get more information to be able to really communicate and talk to each other.
Very good. Yeah, disc is actually a great tool for sales guys because it helps them understand their clients or customers better, how to communicate with them. There are actually some workshops built around just using DISC for sales and how you can do that appropriately.
Yeah.
Good to have you here, Deb.
Thank you.
How about Ron?
Hey, Dave. I'm Ron Dolan. I'm down in Sydney, down under. So I'm on the next day to you, so good evening to everybody there. And if there's anybody else on this call from Australia, good morning to them. I work largely as a business coach, business and corporate coach. I use a number of other tools such as the MBTI and a bunch of other stuff, Dave, but I've always had an interest in the disc, always wanted to add another tool to the box, so to speak. And here I am wanting to see how I can extend my talent skills and then obviously help the clients that I deal with in this regard. So looking forward to it. Thanks, Dave.
Very good. Good to have you here, Ron. So what time is it in Sydney?
Dave, we're on 11:07 in the morning at this point in time, and I can tell you we have temperatures here in early September that we normally see in midsummer. And like California in the States, we're a bit fire-prone, and we've just had our first very early summer bushfire. So... It's a bit of a worrying one for us. We hope we're not going to land up like you had with that massive fire in California. So we're on 11 a.m. Thanks, Dave.
Good to have you here, Ron. Welcome. How about Phyllis? Is Phyllis here?
Yes, this is Phyllis, and I'm from Houston, Texas, and I am taking this
Sorry, go ahead, Phyllis.
And I was signed up for this course to add this to my tool belt.
And you're from Houston, right?
Yes, sir.
I'll be down there in about 2 months, actually, for a couple of days.
Ooh, okay.
Maybe we can have lunch or something while I'm down there.
Yeah, go Texans. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, I used to live in Dallas, so yeah, I'm a big Texan fan.
Oh, okay, good. I like you already.
I'll tell you, there are no friendlier people than there are in Texas. I just love them.
Right, right.
So I heard Jerry log on. You're next on my list here, Jerry. If you would introduce yourself, your name, and where you're from, how you hope to use DISC in your practice.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Green. I'm from Utica, New York, upstate. And just getting started, I'm thinking about going into coaching. And this training looked very interesting.
All right. Very good. Well, it's good to have you here, Jerry.
Thank you.
How about David?
Yes, David Sullivan. I am in Lexington, Tennessee, which is about halfway between Memphis and Nashville. And after about 40 years in the human resource business, I've decided to go into private practice and sort of semi-retired from my company. And so I have been doing a lot of internal coaching, and I'm a certified coach. But I've gone through some DISC training before, but the reason for doing this today is to hopefully to sharpen my saw a little bit and become very good at it and use it in my coaching practice. And my company is called The Peer Group.
Very good, David. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
And how about Sandra? Oh, Sandra? And how about Andy? Did Andy join us? Okay. Did I miss anybody?
Hey, Dave, this is Oliver Fu here. I literally signed up for this course, 25 minutes ago.
Okay.
I'm from Singapore, so good evening to you from sunny Singapore. I'm a sales and executive coach. I help people sell better. I help people lead better. Intuitively, I know that this will help me. I'm just not sure how yet, so I'm here to find out.
All right, very good. Well, welcome to all of you. So, Oliver, you've got no material for yet tonight because I haven't seen your registration come through yet, but I'll send you things after class is over tonight so you'll see what's going on.
All right, thank you.
The rest of you should have received a couple of things. You should have received, first of all, an access code for your own DISC profile, which I know many of you guys have taken already. Anyone besides Oliver did not get that DISC access code?
I don't think I got that. This is Jerry.
Is that Mac?
Jerry.
Oh, Jerry?
Yeah, but I had taken the DISC actually earlier this year. Through a different program.
You have a Hotmail account, so you might want to check your spam filter.
Okay.
But I sent it to you probably after you registered, about 2 hours ago, something like that.
Oh, all right.
Anyone else has not seen their DISC access code yet? All right. So you get the DISC access code, which gives you your own DISC profile. You also should have received from the CTA the workbook called the DISC Coaching Catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
Did you all get that?
Yes, I have it.
I did not get that. This is Carolyn.
You did not get it, Carolyn?
I did not, no.
Okay. Anyone else did not get the Catalyst? So, Carolyn, I'll send it to you after class is over here. It's the workbook we use to work our way through DISC and how DISC works. And I'm the author of that, so it's a phenomenal resource, wonderful resource.
It must be.
It is truly outstanding, yes. Now, actually, we designed it really just for coaching. And so it's something that I think you can use not only now but in the future as well. So you also got from me an email with the syllabus, which tells you session by session what we're all going to do each session. So did you all get the syllabus in the email from me?
No, I didn't get that.
Oh, hi, Dave. This is Ron here in Sydney. No, I didn't get that one.
So, Ron, that would have gone out to you last night. So if you haven't gotten it, that's a problem. And I will resend it to you here shortly.
I don't see it in my email either. This is Carolyn again.
So you didn't get the email either, huh?
Okay. Would it be from you, Dave?
It'd be from me. My company was called ECI Learning.
Okay.
So it would not come in from CTA. It would have come in directly from me.
No, I didn't get that also.
I didn't get that either.
I don't see that either.
Okay. So I'll send that out to the three of you then. Class is over here again. And I'll do it within 15 minutes. So if you don't see it within an hour, send me an email, and I will try and reply to it that way to get back to you. Now, my email address, those of you guys who didn't get email from me, is simply dave@ecilearning.com. Now, I could also be reached at dave@coachtrainingalliance.com. Because I was one of their instructors for a number of years, but just last year, one of my clients made me an offer that I frankly couldn't refuse to come work with them directly. So I'm no longer teaching for CTA except for the disc course, which I teach twice a year. So,
Dave, this is Phyllis. Can you add me to that? I don't have that email.
Okay.
And Mindy too. I don't have it either.
Mac also, Dave.
Well, that's almost the entire class.
Yeah, Deb's here. I'm looking for it. Send it to me.
All right. And you don't see it either, Deb?
Nope. Jen, do you see it?
I have it.
Okay. Hey, one of them got through.
I have it.
Well,
it's 115 pages.
That's the
syllabus is only about 3 pages long, I think.
Oh, I got the syllabus too, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
It says Welcome to the Art and Science of Using Disc in Coaching.
Yep, got it.
Okay.
I got mine yesterday at 9:13. And it has 2 links in it at the bottom of the email.
That's true. I'll send that after class is over to all you guys so you'll all have it because for some reason you guys, it didn't get out, and I don't know why that would be.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So at the end of our 6 sessions together, there's also a certification exam that you can take to become a DISC-certified practitioner. The test, I will tell you, is much harder than the CTA test is. But that doesn't say a whole lot, does it? That's a pretty easy test. It is one but you only have one chance to pass that test, unlike the CTA test where you get 2 chances at it. You get 1 shot here. But it's open book, it's open notes, and it's fairly straightforward. And you don't have to take the exam if you don't want to. You want to get certified, there's no additional charge for that. And you have a week to get it done after class comes to an end.
Is there a charge for that?
Nope. It is free of charge.
Okay.
All right. So one thing I want to mention to you guys as we go through here. Now, you don't have the syllabus, so this is a little goofy right now maybe, but as you look at the syllabus, it lays out there for you what happens in each of the 6 sessions. And if you look at the syllabus and say to yourself, gee, I want to make sure we discuss this issue, I don't see it on the syllabus, just drop me a note or mention it early in class. And what I'll do is, if it's outside of our scope, I'll still address the issue, but I'll address it at the end of class. So when class ends, what I'll do is say, so I want to discuss using disk as a 360, which is possible, by the way. It's not part of our learning here today, but if that interests you and you tell me, I'll announce to the group. So I want to hear about disk 360. Class is over tonight. We'll talk about that when class is done. When the top of the hour comes and we sign off, I'll just tell you. If you want to hear about disk 360, hang around. If not, we're done for the day. That way you can get your questions answered about the whatever questions you have and not take up class time. That seem fair?
Fair enough.
Sounds good. All right. So let's jump into disk because it's a fascinating topic. And if you had the syllabus, you don't know what to read for tonight, but so you'd be a little bit blind here on the reading, but that's okay. Do you guys know where disk came from? Anybody know the history of disk?
The psychologist that created that.
Okay. You know who he was?
Marston.
Yeah, Dr. William Moulton Marston. So, by the way, if you guys didn't get the syllabus, you also don't have the slides for tonight, do you?
No.
No.
What happened to our stuff here? So the slides allow you, I guess the slides to before each session starts, so you can write on them during the session and take notes.
I think it was attached to your one email with the, I don't even know, because I have the slides and everything here.
Yeah, that was attached to the syllabus, yeah.
Yep. I've got all that. I'm trying to find my email right now. So if I find it, I'll send it to you.
All right. Well, Dr. William Moulton Marston is the guy responsible for creating the theories behind disk. He didn't actually create the profile, but just the theories. And when he did his work on this, he wrote a book. And the book was called The Emotions of Normal People. Now, key word here, of course, is normal, okay? This is not a tool. It's not a psychiatric tool, so it doesn't tell you about people who may be a little off-center, if you will. It's designed to get the average person and where they fall into the spectrum of the DISC. Now, Dr. Marston was famous for his work and his book at the time, but he was also famous for two other things that he helped invent. One of those things plays very closely in with the idea of emotions and behavioral styles. That thing was called the lie detector. So you guys may have used one of those before, for all I know. But he invented the lie detector as well as the concept behind disk. And he also invented Wonder Woman. So actually, it was he and his wife invented her together. Back in the 1920s, of course, women were basically had their place, if you will, in the home to be seen and not heard. He and his wife believed very strongly that women have a very powerful place in society and should not be ignored, hence the superhero Wonder Woman. So as you can see about Dr. Marston, he had a rather broad sense of things that were of interest to him. We like that about him. Now, Dr. Marston's theories about behaviors are a little different than we see in the profile today, but they're really quite important because they can really help us sometimes understand people by relating back to his early theories. And his early theories about behavior related back to the concept of how people interrelate with the environment around them. And Dr. Marston said that some people view themselves as much more powerful than the environment that they live in. And they have the ability, they believe, to change things and interact with things around them and make things different. Now, Likewise, some people believe that the environment is what it is. You can't change it. You can't affect it. You're kind of at its mercy, that you are less powerful than the environment. So those two, if you have a piece of paper in front of you, since you haven't got the notes, put it at the top of the page, more powerful, and put it at the bottom, less powerful, and draw a vertical line from one to the other. That's two ends of a spectrum, if you will. Now, along the same line, Dr. Marston believed that some people believe that what they lived in was a very favorable environment. The world around them was good and honest and just and positive, and they enjoyed the environment. Likewise, other folks believed that they were less powerful than the environment around them, that it was not a positive place. You had to take care of yourself, watch yourself at all times, be careful, or you might get run over. The world's a dangerous place, less powerful. So on the same piece of paper, stick on the extreme right-hand side, about halfway down the page, favorable environment. On the left-hand side, about the same spot, put unfavorable environment. Draw a line across the page. And you can see a four-quadrant model begin to emerge there. So this was his original theory about behavioral styles and how they worked. This translates directly into our DISC today, and we'll see how that works in a few minutes here. But I want you to think about this in terms of someone who says, I am more powerful than the environment around me. And it's a good thing I am, because you know what? It's not a good place. Those folks say, may not be good, but I'm powerful, and I can fix it. I can change it. I can make it better. I can control it. That's the upper left-hand quadrant, more powerful and unfavorable. That today equates to our high D behavioral style. Now, up to the upper right-hand quadrant there, people who think that they are more powerful than the environment. And it's nice, but you know what? It's a pretty good place to be anyway. So life is good, and I'm powerful, and I can control things. And to them, life is pretty good. And that's the high I personality, the upper right-hand quadrant. Move down to the lower right-hand quadrant. Again, people perceive a favorable environment. Good places to live, like things around me. It's a good thing, though, because I'm less powerful than the environment. So thank goodness everything's okay, because if it wasn't, I could be in trouble here. But you know what? So far things are okay. I need to make sure things don't change too much to make them not okay. Right now I'm good. That's the high S behavioral style. The lower left-hand quadrant, people who say that they are less powerful than the environment and it's unfavorable environment, those folks look at it, life as being a bit of a challenge and wonder themselves, how can they protect themselves from the things around them, from things causing them challenges and problems? So that's the high C behavioral style. Now, what we're going to do here, as we move through this whole process, We're going to spend today talking about, again, the history, scoring, some other things about this. We're going to go into the high D and high I styles in some more depth on Thursday night's call, then the S and the C next Tuesday. But this is just a quick overview of how Marston originally saw the model and how it really worked for him. Are there questions so far? All right. So, say, Marston didn't actually create the profile, though. So the profile came to be in about 1972 when researchers at the University of Minnesota got together and using Marston's works and some other works put together we today call the disk profile. Now, back in those early years, of course, it wasn't computerized. It was all done by hand. And it was considered really something very significant and something that was really different than they had seen in the past. Because unlike Myers-Briggs, this was a behavioral style profile, not a psychological profile. But the view there from the researchers was a little different than Marston's, because they believed, where Marston talked about being more powerful or less powerful than the environment, these researchers said that some people are more naturally active or outgoing or aggressive or interactive than others. That's the top part of their model. Other folks are more thoughtful, more reserved, more laid back, more quiet, more interested in thoughts, and that's that bottom half, where the people who were, Marston had people who were, thought of everyone was unfavorable, or sorry, less powerful. They viewed it as being quiet and reserved. Where Marston said people were, thought the environment was favorable, that's where these researchers said these folks tend to be more people-oriented. So the right-hand side of that same page there is a people orientation, an engagement with people around them, a friendliness, if you will. Whereas the left side was left for things like tasks and getting things done and keeping track of things around you and asking questions. So that's the difference between the original Marston model and the more current DISC model in terms of the four quadrants. So the theories are really quite similar, a little different verbiage, different way of viewing what it is. So when you work with DISC today, you'll talk in terms of the more modern words around DISC, but I have found that sometimes when I'm working with DISC and working with people, and I have problems figuring out exactly where they might fit, using the original Marston model of how they feel about the environment is sometimes easier. Because I can tell when people feel powerful versus not powerful. I can tell when people feel that life is tough and I should be careful versus life is good and I want to enjoy it. So when these researchers created the initial assessment around DISC, it was created the way you saw the profile for yourself being taken, as a forced choice model. It was a matter of saying, you know, you had to choose between the words and say, this word is most like me, this word is least like me. And that was done intentionally to force people to make decisions about which way they wanted to accept themselves. So what's the advantage you guys might think of having a forced choice model versus maybe a scale of where do you fall in this world on a scale of 1 to 10?
Too easy to put yourself in the middle.
Yeah.
Of the scale.
Or, I like these words. They're all like me. I put myself higher on these words. And these ones I don't like so much, I'll put myself less on those. Do you think sometimes people try and fool themselves? Yeah. So we're all coaches. We've all seen that happen, haven't we? So, forced choice, checking among four words and saying, this word is most like me, this word is least like me, helps eliminate that issue of, am I rolling toward the middle? Or choose the only words you think really flatter yourself. We'll cover that in more depth here in not only the session here today, but also in the session six as well. So sometimes when you look at these words, and people taking the profile, they say things like, well, all of these words describe me, or none of these words describe me. And that's, again, a reason to use the forced choice, because you're saying, just pick the one that's the most like you, or the one that's the least like you, and force them to make a decision. What you're going to discover is that some behavioral styles, by their very nature, don't like to make decisions. This kind of forces their hand on that. Generally speaking, when I do the profile with either in workshops or when I do it with clients when I'm there with them face-to-face, I make them do it in 7 minutes or less so they won't analyze the profile but answer honestly and quickly. So one of the key things about DISC you should know right up front here is that the DISC concepts are now public domain, which means there are 1,000,001 DISC or DISC-like organizations out there. And the stuff that I use here that I sent to you guys was created by Inkscape Publishing. Excuse me one second. Okay. And I use Inkscape Publishing because they are descendant from the original work that was done back in 1972. Actually, the people who created DISC back in 1972, it was two PhDs who worked together. They created the profile. But about 10 years later, they had a falling out, and they created two separate companies. One of was called TTI, Target Training International. This one was called Carlson Learning. Carlson Learning eventually involved Inkscape Publishing today, that I use the material for them. TTI is still around and still viable. And frankly, I've been certified by them as well. And I use some of their theories, and I use some of the theories from Inkscape Publishing based on what I've actually seen work for me in real life. But you'll see other DISC-like instruments out there. You'll see things that will call themselves DISC. You'll see things that look a lot like DISC because they're done with things like different types of animals, different types of flowers, different colors. These are all basically the same theories that's behind DISC, but they're just done differently for marketing reasons to show themselves differently than the original DISC profile. All right. Questions so far?
The Inkscape Publishing, will we be able to set up something with them, or we just have to go through you for use with our own clients?
First of all, you can go through them directly, absolutely.
Okay.
You have to become a distributor to use the stuff with them directly. We'll cover that in session six. And I'm a distributor with Inkscape. I buy material directly from them. I will tell you it costs some money to become a distributor. It's not cheap. But if you're going to use a disc a lot, like I do, it makes good sense to become a distributor. You're going to use it just sometimes or a dozen or so times a year. It makes sense to buy it from someone else and then and pay a little, you know, pay retail, if you will, but not spend the money on the distributorship. We'll talk about that more in session six, though.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? All right. So we laid the current disc model upon the old disc model from Marston himself, and you can see that the active behavioral style coupled with the questioning or task orientation turns into our high D. You can link that back to Marston's theories pretty easily, actually. Likewise, the active active behavioral style and the accepting or people orientation is your high I. Likewise, the thoughtful or reserved behavioral style with the people orientation is your high S. And last but not least, these people who are more thoughtful and reserved, more questioning or task-oriented, they fit into the high C category. Okay? And that high D, some key words we use around that high D that help it drive it home for us, words like direct or decisive or drivers. Even these, we've seen the word dominator used on that one. It feels a little harsh to me, but I've seen that used that way. The high I, the I stands for influencer. People tend to be interactive, interested in people. They're outgoing. They're fun to be around. And why wouldn't they be fun to be around? They live in a positive environment that they can control. So they're alive in life. That S stands for steadiness. And you can look at it as being stable or secure. Stable comes back to the idea of not wanting to change things too much because it's a positive environment, if you will. Things are good. I don't want to rock the boat here. So people in that S category are really kind of salt-of-the-earth kind of people. Nice folks to have around, friendly, without being too outgoing. Then that high C stands for conscientious. You also might use the word compliant or controlled. These tend to be people who are rule followers, and they kind of make rules to protect themselves from those things that might be harming them otherwise. Because don't forget, they're less powerful than the environment, and it's not a good place, so rules are my friends. Now, as we move through our DISC studies here, it's really important you guys understand some key things about DISC in terms of how to use it and where its value really is. One of the things we're going to talk about here quite a bit in class is how people are actually a combination of styles and not just one of the four quadrants. But also we're going to talk about the fact that DISC, while it be, is a great tool, and I have to admit I really like the tool, I love the tool, it is not an end-all, be-all. There are a bunch of things that DISC doesn't measure. Now, you guys took the profile yourself, most of you, in the last 24 hours, some cases less than that. What are some things that you can tell by looking at the profile that DISC doesn't measure?
IQ.
Pardon me?
IQ.
IQ, yeah. There was no math section, was there?
No.
There was no science section. We didn't try and measure your intelligence. We measured behaviors.
Correct.
What else might DISC not measure?
Dave, Ron here. I think there's no numeric section to this either.
Absolutely right. Numeric section in there. What else does a disk not measure?
It does not measure your values.
Ah, very important. Does not measure your values. So while you may follow the same style as someone else who's very similar, you may have very different values because this does not take that into account. Good. What else?
It didn't measure. It made me laugh when I had to choose a word, and I kept thinking, oh, yeah, okay. And my sense of humor.
Exactly true. Your sense of humor. Do you think there are a lot of high-eyed comedians out there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. When you're forced to do something like that and be honest with yourself, then you always chuckle.
You always chuckle. That's right. There are high-eye comedians because they like to tell all kinds of funny stories. There are high-S comedians. There are high-C comedians. There are high-D comedians. We don't measure your sense of humor. We hope that it exists, but we don't measure it. Good. Anything else come to mind?
Dave, Ron again. I'm thinking more along the lines of reasoning, logic. Difficult to explain that, but if you look at some psychometrics that go into things like shapes and block designs and stuff like that, obviously there's an assumption that obviously you understand, firstly, what the words actually mean, and B, there's no test for logic reasoning in that, as far as I could see.
Yep. Very, very true. Very, very true. And does it measure your skills? Does it measure your talents? Does it say if you can play the piano or not? Does it measure your experience? What good is it? All these things it doesn't measure. The key here is that what DISC does measure, it measures very well. And Marson would tell you that all people are different, but in some cases they are predictably different. So when people talk about, profiles, they try to put you into a box. Yeah, there's kind of a box here, but it's on a very small part of your overall behavior. It's not the entire you. It's just certain key things we're going to look at together that will help describe you. So all people are different, but in some key areas they are predictably different. Now, on your personal profiles, you saw there that there were, if you look on page 3 of your profile, you see what's called graph 3. And that's the key graph. We'll talk about that quite a bit as we go through here. If we go back to page 23 of your profile, you'll see there are actually 3 graphs. Now, ideally, if you look on page 23 of your profile, and you see the 3 graphs there, they'll be fairly consistent in their shape. The 3 graph concept is one of the things that separates different DISC companies and different DISC theories. TTI, for example, believes very strongly in all 3 graphs. And a meaning for each of the 3 graphs, which we're going to discuss here. Others, unlike like Inscape, says, well, okay, we understand them, but we can't really prove them. Therefore, we're going to give them to you, but we're going to focus on graph 3. Now, my experience has been that graph 3 is a key graph. I absolutely agree with everyone about that one. But like TTI, I have found graphs 1 and graphs 2 to be really quite important. And it was part of the discussion about the 3 graphs and the variance of the 3 graphs, the value of the 3 graphs, that caused the split between TTI and Carlson Learning way back when. So we're going to talk here in theory, in some detail in session 6, actually, about how these things are created. But it's enough for now to tell you that the graph one you see there is created from all the answers to the questions you said were most like you. The graph two comes from those words you said were least like you. And graph three, which is really the key graph, is one based on the difference between graphs one and graphs two. So graph one is commonly called the mask. Picture yourself putting on a mask and saying, here is what I'm going to show the world around me. It may not be really me, but it's what I want to show people. So that graph, I say, comes from the responses you said with the words that were most like you. And this one also can change quite a bit based on your circumstances. You ever had a job you really loved where you just enjoyed going to work every single day and life was a joy for you? You might have a lot more very positive responses than what if you said something was least like you. So, for example, make it a little clearer. Let's say that you really enjoy working with numbers, and you're in a job that you really can and show that quite a bit. Well, number orientation relates also mostly back to the high C style. And so working in that job, enjoying that job, work with numbers, your high C might be quite high. Well, picture a person in that very same job, work with numbers all the time, but you know what? They really don't like it. That's going to lower, they may be just as talented and qualified at it, it's going to lower that high C. So this is about words that are most like you. It's what you show the outside world, but it may not be the real you. Graph two is commonly called the core. I mentioned before, this comes from the word you said were least like you. Now, this graph tends to change less than graph one does. Because normally, things that are least like us are things we learned at a very early age to not do or to not be considered good for. So they're early beliefs or the behaviors that are reinforced by our parents, by our siblings, or in the business world, by our first bosses, those kind of people. These things become ingrained in us as X is good, Y is bad. So this one tends to change very little over time. And because of its early behavioral learning that we do, under pressure, we might revert back to the strengths of the graph two versus graph one or graph three. So sometimes called the under pressure graph. How you behave under pressure? This will show you what your natural strengths and challenges are. We'll cover some more depth as we go through the session for the next five sessions here, but these basic graphs are pretty important to understand. So that graph three then, which is the one who shows on page three, and again, part of the ones on page 23, is called the mirror. It's the best reflection of your true self. It's a combination of graph one and graph three. And literally, as we'll see here later on, it comes from the difference between the mask, and the core. So like naturally as graph 1 changes, graph 3 can change as well. And what we're looking for, we use all three graphs, are to see if they're consistently shaped, not identical, but consistently shaped, so that our outside world, our mask, is consistent with our core, and what we show the outside world through our mirror. So this is important because as you work with your clients and you see a variance in those graphs, first thing it tells me is, something's going on with this client. That it made their graph 1 change, which changed their graph 3, and somehow they're in a lot of discomfort. And I need to deal with that discomfort. So the three graphs are related. They all play together. We'll talk about why as we go through here. But that's why I look to make sure that all three are in sync when I talk to someone about their profile. If they are not in sync, I know something might be amiss, something I need to pay some attention to. Questions so far?
Dave, it's Ron here.
Yes, Ron.
Could I then ask you if you find a great difference, particularly between 1, 2, and then obviously 3, is that some sort of indicator of avoidance or maybe an event in the person's life currently happening, which is now being reflected in the graph? And if so, how do you tease that out?
That's a great question. And yes, it generally is something happening to them right now. And what I oftentimes do is say, tell me, what's going on right now in your life? And sometimes if clients have not built up the trust with you yet, they'll say things like, well, everything's fine. Things are pretty good, you know. And you can, or what I can say to them, you know, I have a feeling they have some discomfort here. Some things right now don't feel right to you. What are those kind of things that don't feel right to you right now? And as you ask those kind of questions, it kind of tease out the idea of what's really going on with you right now. What would you change in your life right now if you could change anything? You begin to uncover some of the things that are really bothering them underneath.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Dave.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I see what you're saying. My thought goes immediately to somebody in a commercial environment or organizational environment who might be undertaking this as part of a team who is perhaps at loggerheads or in a position of stress with their supervisor or boss who may not respond well to that. And that's, I've had an instance like that, but with a different test and that's, or a different assessment, if you like. And I found that extremely difficult to navigate my way around that. That's why I'm asking this question.
Yeah, it really is. You have to know who the client is. Some clients are very open about it. So I sense some stress in your life. Oh, God, yeah, I'm so stressed. I hate my boss, hate my job, hate all these things. Other folks are going to protect themselves more. See where that might play into your DISC profile, protect myself more from things around me. A lot of the S's and C's fall in that category. And because of their, lack of a better term, defensiveness, you have to tread fairly lightly if they're reticent that way. And it means asking questions that are oriented toward the positive. And that's why I said if they're sort of reticent, I might say things like, so, life's going pretty good for you now. What would you change if you could change one thing? What would make your life even better? What's the one thing that's changed for you in the last 6 months? And if they're reticent, those things will usually bring out the questions. It's going to take some time and some digging. The concept of, you know, being open to listening and building your question upon their last response. If you guys have had the CTA course, you understand the concept of, I don't form my question in advance. I form my question based upon your response. And I want to play dumb and dig deep by building upon your last response. And that's the way I've generally found to get through them. But you've got to find an angle to get past that initial exterior, which is generally done, if they're reticent, in a positive way. So the other side of the coin is when they're willing to talk about it. And I had a team work with a couple of years ago where I had a management team I was working with, and the CEO said, we're good. We're not great. Why aren't we great? I think I have great people. We did the DISC profiles. We're talking about that. He made that very same statement. We're good. We're not great. Why aren't we great? I turned to the guy next to me and I said, so, Greg, how long have you hated your job? And the boss said, no, Greg is great. He didn't hate his job. I turned to Greg and Greg went, of course I hate this job. I'm good at it, but I really don't like it. I mean, I'm doing it because the team needs me to, and I'm happy to step in for the team, but it's not what I want to be doing. And that showed between graph two, his core behavioral style, and his mask in graph one were very different. He was a high I behavioral style, having to act like a high D to be effective. And he was effective, but he hated it. And he had three guys on a team of five executives there who all were kind of out of place, if you will, in terms of their behavioral style versus their job requirements. That's why they were good, but not great. All right. Wish you guys had these slides in front of you. It would be so much easier this way. Next part of the discussion here is something called the Johari window. I'm going to cover here in just a very few minutes. Like the DISC model, it's a four-quadrant model. So you have some paper there handy. Draw yourself four quadrants again. And the Johari window, it's got a fascinating background. It was created back in 1954 by two guys named Joe and Harry. Okay, it's not that fascinating, I guess, but it's interesting nonetheless. But it's a great model for using DISC. It's a great model for coaching because that upper left-hand quadrant is called the arena. And this, by the way, is in your DISC catalyst. You'll see it in there. The arena is the area that you know about that person and they know about you. It's the area of trust. It's the area where you're comfortable talking to each other. So here in the call tonight, you guys all know that I used to be a CTA coach. And that's, I think, worth some points to you guys since you were all, I assume, mostly CTA students. You know that I've been using DISC for over 10 years, so there's some things we can talk about there. It helps build that trust out a little bit. You know I'm from Cleveland, which is, I don't know, positive or negative, but you know I'm from Cleveland, and I like Texans. Those things that you know about me and I know about me are things that we have in common, that we understand about each other, and that we can talk about quite freely. Now, beneath that, the lower left-hand quadrant is called the mask. Those are things that are hidden from view, but you don't know about me because I haven't told you that. Either I haven't gotten around to it yet, or I may never tell you this because I don't want you to know it. I'm hiding these things from you in some way. And because we have that area there that you can't see into and that I know about and that you don't, it's an area where we can't have trust just yet. We'll get back to that in a second. The upper right-hand quadrant are called the blind spots. These are things that you guys might see in me that I don't see in myself. Now, we're on the phone here, so it's a little hard to do this, but let's imagine we're working in person. And you say we're, let's say we're in an auditorium, and I'm giving a speech on stage. And I'm giving this impassioned speech and not getting the reaction I really wanted to get. Because what you guys know that I don't know is that my zipper is down. That's a blind spot for me. I didn't know that, but you guys all knew it. You're out there giggling, and I can't figure out what's going on. Or, to get back to behavioral style, maybe when I talk, I tend to come across as giddy, overly happy, and not very serious. And you guys see that in the way I behave, and I don't see it that way. And I don't know why people don't take me more seriously. That's my blind spot. The lower right-hand quadrant is called the potential. It's the unknown. You don't know it, and I don't know it. Tomorrow, I'm going to win the lottery. It's going to change my whole life. You don't know it. I don't know it. Tomorrow, I'm going to get fired. It's going to change my life. You don't know it. I don't know it. For coaching, part of the goal of coaching is to take that upper left-hand quadrant, that arena, that openness, everything we can discuss more freely, everything we can see all things around us. My blind spots are becoming clearer, and the mask of hidden things from you is being pushed away. The more we enlarge that arena, the easier it is for me to see myself as you see me, and therefore to coach myself or be coached by you. That's part of the goal of coaching. DISC helps us do that by giving us the words and language to help us see things about ourselves we didn't otherwise see, if you will, get rid of those blind spots, and for giving me a way to tell you things that are really important to me that I might otherwise not tell you, opening up and removing some of that mask. So this is going to play very closely back into our coaching model and our coaching here for DISC over the next six sessions. Okay, I see we're at the top of the hour here. Are there any questions I can answer for you, the things we covered here today together? Okay. I'm going to resend out the syllabus and the slides for session one here in the next 10 minutes. So if you don't see them within an hour, please write to me a note at the addresses I gave to you earlier, and I'll reply to that with the same material. Hopefully it'll get through to you then. If it doesn't get through to you and you need to call me, my number, my telephone number, is 303-681-8982. And if you need, if questions or things you need to get from me, I'm happy to help you guys, so don't be shy.
Cool. And this playback will be available, correct?
Playback will be available, yeah. There'll be a link out probably tomorrow. We'll send it out to the group of where the recording is going to be.
Okay.
All six recordings will be located in the same location, so as each class finishes up, we'll the next section out there. My advice really is not just to listen to it again, but download it and save it.
Okay.
Because as you use DISC, like any other tool you might use, the more you use it, the better you're going to get with it. And the more times to go back and review that audio again and say, aha, I see things now I didn't see before because I know more now than I knew before.
Okay.
All right. Any last questions or comments? Hi, Jennifer. Okay. All right, guys. I'll talk to you guys all then on Thursday night. Or in your case, on Friday morning.
Thanks,
bye, guys.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Thanks.